Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys, episode of The Personal Wealth Coach starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we need to give our disclosure. Our disclosure is that The Personal Wealth Coach is an investment advisory firm as well as a radio program. Isn't that exciting?
Depends on who you ask.
Full disclosure. By the way, an investment advisory firm registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission, so you'll know who to file complaints with. It was a dangling participle.
Well, you're allowed to do that now. The grammatical
with whom you should file a complaint.
Yeah, there you go.
The grammatical people say I can dangle my participle?
Yes, this is a new decision. I think it was the same committee that decided Pluto was no longer a planet. They got together later and said, now you're allowed to dangle your participles. But I'm not sure you should do it in public still.
No, I have specific written instructions that I must carefully watch out for dangling participles and remove them with a knife if necessary.
See, it's now proper to allow your participles to dangle. See, this is the kind
who
of
said,
news.
I want to know who said that.
I can look it up.
Because I'll cite that when I'm writing papers.
And say, no, I'm allowed to do this now. Put a with in there to dangle it just for the fun of it.
The APA, which is the methodology under which I'm writing, says you must not dangle participles.
Oh, my.
And anyone who's out there been an academia nut at any length of time will recognize what the APA, which is the American Psychological Association, they determine how these things are done. Anyway, you are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach. And if you presume that today is Friday, no, it's not. If today is Saturday, February 8th, 2014, then you can actually call in here and ask these two guys in here, Jeff and
Jake,
questions about anything or make comments about anything that has to do with the economy or investing or money or things of that ilk, which is one of my favorite words. And you can do so if you're using a old-fashioned copper-type landline. You can call 773-1400. Of course, if you're using your cell phone, you can put 254-773-1400. Otherwise, you can call
1-866-597-1400. That's anywhere else except possibly
in the sound of your voice.
Right. If you're
outside the United States, you can't.
Yeah. If you're not listening to me, you probably can't get it.
Well, so, if a person were listening on the internet and they were outside the United States, they could simply put a 1 or a 01 in front of the 254
1-866.
Well, I'm talking about, but the 1-866 actually won't work outside the United States.
01-866.
No, won't. The toll-free numbers generally don't work outside, and that one doesn't, I've been told. So this is the kind of stuff we obsess over at The Personal Wealth Coach, and it's disgusting. So we should probably get into something about what happened during the week since we have not been on the radio for a full week. That should be a headline. Personal Wealth Coach off the air for 1 week.
Longest time since last week.
Right.
We could write for major newspapers.
Yes, yes. Well, let's see what happened. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed out the week at 15,794.08. Isn't that exciting? It was up 0.61% for the week. It's down 4.72% for year to date. And obviously people think that's very disappointing and they're very unhappy about it. However, if we look at year-over-year performance, it's 12.87% up, which I really thought was pretty reasonable until I heard all the complaints and moans and unhappiness. I mean, the S&P 500, yeah, it was up 0.81. It's down about 2.78 for the year, the year, which is, you know, approximately 5 weeks long now.
Oh, yes.
And but if you look back one full year ago, the S&P 500 is up over 8. And frankly, I don't completely understand. Well, I guess I do in some ways. But it seems to me, it does still seem to me a little odd that people seem to be very upset about this, that the S&P 500 is only up 18%. for a one-year trailing return.
All right. Well, a lot of people are talking about the jobs report that's just come out.
Steve is dead.
Yes, different jobs. We're not talking about Steve anymore.
Well, they were talking about the most people talk to me. We're talking about the market. The fact, the market is down. You know,
that's true.
This correction.
When I do research before the program, uh-huh. I'm looking at the thing that people have been waiting all Friday. They were waiting for the jobs report to come out.
Was that real people or was that economists and stock traders?
They're probably not real people. You're right.
I don't know what they are, but they're not real people. Okay.
Okay. So one, U.S. yields slide after jobs data falls flat.
Oh, I love that.
Okay, so you go.
There's one headline.
That's one headline. Next headline. Stocks rise as investors cheer hiring trends. These are the same newspaper.
Now, this is
news publication.
This is what the folks, there is a even slightly larger perspective here than the moment-to-moment breathless breaking news, Fox or CNN or whatever you watch.
Breaking news, people are sad, people are happy.
And that is that during the first part of the year, up until this week, the stock markets have generally declined. And there's been a great deal of fear. And the great deal of fear, if you actually read a lot, manufacturing is down and this and that, and we're really worried about the jobs report. And if the jobs report comes out with less than 178,000 people hired, that's why we're concerned that it might come out with less than a drop, because it was concerned. And so the jobs report finally came out. And it was way the heck below expectations. And the markets promptly rose.
Well, it depends on how you look at the jobs report to say whether or not it was way the heck below expectations.
Well, I'm not talking about the unemployment report. I'm talking about the jobs report.
Right.
So what happened is the survey of employers, the survey of companies, said that non-farm payrolls rose only 113,000 in January, far below the expectation of 180,000 to 190,000.
Right.
So you would think that that would be bad news. And, of course, bad news, you would think, would cause the market to decline. So as soon as the report came out, it took a tiny little dip and then went up significantly. And you know, I'm curious if anybody out there has an answer for that one. I do, but
I have some answers.
You do?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But
you're not anybody
you're
out
not,
there.
You're not out
I'm
there.
I'm in here.
Now, there was another little subnote to it, and that is that the November job gains had been reported at 200,000, and they raised it to 237,000, and they added another 1,000 to December's. So there's 38,000 more jobs now. So if you took the, even if you took the 113 and you added 38 to it, if I figure that correctly, we're up a little over 140,000. But everything I read coming into this announcement suggested that a big portion of why the market was declining was fear that the report would come out below 180,000. It came out 113, and the market rose. Anybody got a?
I've got some answers for it.
I've got some good answers. I don't. Well, we have to make a couple of presumptions here. Number one, someone is listening. And I think that may be an unwarranted presumption at this point. 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
I think they're scared to call.
Yeah, I'm not listening. So if they're just doing what I'm doing,
you know, you could like
they wouldn't be
your cell phone.
I could call in to the program right now. I could
and pretend to be somebody else.
Why would I do that?
Well, so that people would think that we actually have someone listening. But, of course, someone would have to be listening.
In order to think that somebody was listening.
Someone was listening.
Right.
I don't know if that's
going
to work either. Okay.
This falls very easily. We've now changed the wording. When clients come into the office, we have an agenda for the meeting. And
we do?
We hand them a piece of paper that says this is what we're going to talk about. And for a while there, the beginning of the agenda was to discuss what was on the agenda.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense.
I just thought that we could put on that portion of the agenda, we could put as a subset of that to talk about talking about what was on the agenda and then just keep doing subsets all the way down, and that would be the whole agenda, would be talking about what was on.
We could do a radio program. You could do like a talking head. You could go on Fox with that, I think, couldn't you?
I think I could go on just about any program as long as I continued to move my mouth and make sounds that sounded somewhat reasonable.
Of course, now there was another number that the talking heads and commentators and pundits, I love the word pundit, I'm not completely sure what it means, but it really sounds cool, noted in passing, and they go, poo-poo, it's no big thing, nobody pays any attention to that number.
Which number is this?
The household survey.
616,000.
Folks, listen to me just a second. The household survey, which is the one we get the unemployment rate from, where they call around to lots and lots of places in the United States. And by the way, they do call cell phones. I checked. And
they do that now, yes.
They call cell phones and they call landlines.
I think
they've
been doing that for 4 years.
And they make sure that they get a good sample. And that means they have to do a lot more calling because there's an awful lot of people who don't want their cell phones called. But they do get a good sample, and they're very careful. They keep calling until they get a good sample. Anyway, they're calling all over the country, and they discovered that the people who actually are doing the work are reporting that there are 616,000 more of them employed
than there used to be,
than there were a month ago.
So the difference between the two numbers.
But the employers only hired 113,000. Now, this is where it gets interesting. now, this is another point. The household survey is not seasonally adjusted.
No.
But the employer survey is seasonally adjusted, which means that over the years, what they've done is say, well, you know, in January, this normally happens. Therefore, we're going to change the numbers. We're going to normalize the data, which I hate. I hate data normalization.
Yes, because data is not generally normal. If those of you that look at a normal bell curve distribution, you know, that sweet, nice, smooth, flowing line.
How many people do you think actually look at bell curve distributions?
Well, that's true. But think about the people that you know, and do they actually fit in that nice, smooth line?
Only school teachers look at bell curve distributions.
I guess just for grading purposes.
Grading on the curve. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the personal wealth coach. Go ahead.
Hello.
There's
one thing that both of you do that's aggravating to no end to me.
What is that?
You overtalk one another. When somebody's saying something, let them finish before you jump in and put in your point of view.
I apologize.
No, you've been doing that as long as I've been listening to you, which is several years, and I said I'm going to call them someday.
Good.
And today I did.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
Watch that, please.
I am probably the guilty person, and I will do my best to stop doing it.
Okay.
I think it's both of us.
All right. Bye.
Thank you.
All right. Well, a good criticism.
Yes. Absolutely. I wanted to talk a little bit further about the jobs report, that the concept of how can one survey say that we made 616,000 jobs and one report say that we're talking about just over 100,000, 100 plus 10 or 20,000.
113.
Yeah, well, depending on how you look at it, because they upgraded the last report as well, if you look at it and say, add the upgraded report from last time. So there was 117. Okay. What's the difference between 117 and 616 as far as thousands go? These are the differences in numbers that we have to look at when we're dealing with the economy as it stands in the recent months. We know a lot more if we look back a few months. We know a lot less when we look back forward at all. So recognizing that the data out there that swings the market in huge ways is pretty well unknown. The fact that we have two headlines from the same, one from Reuters and one from AP, but they're on finance.yahoo.com. One saying, basically they're saying completely different things, saying that panic over jobs report versus investors react happily to jobs report. Well, that's why, because nobody knows how to react to these things when they have two completely conflicting numbers that come out from the government. The same government is telling us two numbers and expect us to accept it and go ahead. Oh, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, whatever he said.
I think the two numbers, by the way, I know you're going to think this is crazy, actually make a great deal of sense.
I agree.
The reason is a sample at any given moment has a potential to be inaccurate, period. If, for instance, my GPS in that I have sitting up on the dashboard of my car will estimate when I'm going to get somewhere, and it presumes that I'm going to be traveling at a given speed to get there, it is averaged together a lot of things, and it's generally pretty accurate. I mean, sometimes down to the minute when I'm going to arrive someplace. But if you took samples of my car moving between the two points, if I'm on the interstate and then I'm on city streets and then I come to stoplights and then I'm on residential streets, there are going to be certain samples when the car is stopped. There's going to be certain samples when the car is going 5 miles an hour, and there's going to be certain samples when the car is going 70 miles an hour or 75. The important thing is, and this is what the GPS does a good job of, is estimating what the average speed will be over an extended period of time. In the jobs report, the only reasonable way to look at it is to look back at least 1 year. And if we look back 1 year, this is where, and among other things, when these jobs reports come out, by the way, they revise them for the following 3 months.
Right.
So if you look at the final revised reports from the last one that they finished revising, which is November, and you go back to a year earlier, you find that we are averaging 200,000 jobs per month for that 12-month period. And that is above what we need to lower unemployment back to more normal and acceptable levels. It is enough above that we should see, based on that 12-month average, we should see unemployment coming down pretty consistently. And lo and behold,
it's happening.
Unemployment is coming down about 1 or 2 tenths every time they report it. And that is exactly consistent with the long-term average of final revised job reports.
The fascinating thing to me about this, it's fascinating, I'm not confused by it anymore. For a long time, I was totally confused, is the crazy reactions on the day-to-day level in the stock market to a report that's going to be revised for the next 3 months. We make all these big decisions, according to the media anyway, the reason why the stock market does this or it does that. And I've even talked to people that do day trading based on jobs numbers, that because they know that the trend of other people reacting in a panicky way is, or in a greedy way, is going to give them the ability to make money off of other people's panic and greed. It is fascinating the way it's so consistent that we react the wrong way on short-term things. Now, to spin that around, just like our system of government, the stock market seems to work rather well over a long period of time. Our system of government seems to work rather well in a long period of time. But if you look at any moment in history, what you'll find is a preponderance of the people talking are complaining about what's going on in the government. And if you find at any given time throughout the market's history, the preponderance of people are talking about the bad things that are out there, when the long-term return is what we're looking for. And if we look at the history of the United States as a country, both the market and the government, we have a pretty good long-term trend. We do have to continue to be invested not only in the market but in the government in order to make sure that it doesn't go off in the ways that we're constantly afraid that it will.
Absolutely.
That's my philosophical talking point for the hour.
Well, one of the things that looking at this particular subject I find fascinating is Friday is when the jobs reports came out, and that's what made the news. Thursday morning is when the market started rising dramatically. Went down on Monday, rose a little bit on Tuesday, stayed pretty much flat on Wednesday. And Thursday morning, right after the open, the Dow Jones Industrial Average shot up from about 15,445 to about 15,575 in moments. Something happened, obviously, Wednesday night or early Thursday morning to change sentiment. Then Friday, as the jobs report came out, the market jumped upward again. Now, this is one of the things, the reason that we're kind of focusing on this is the news media is all over the jobs report, but when you look at the actual stock market performance for the week,
didn't have anything to do with it.
There is no correlation. There is no relationship between the two. This is where we have to be careful, because what the news media reports as a cause for something is in many cases not at all the cause. And I don't mean that the news media comes into it with a bias, although they might. I do know that, for example, Fox is going to be biased against anything the administration does. And
at least on the editorial side.
Well, even in the news I've set and listened to them the other day. And then over on MSNBC, you're going to get the opposite bias. They are kind of polar opposites, and they balance each other nicely. It'd be kind of nice if you had both of them up, can listen to both of them at the same time. You'd probably get something close to the truth, or else go crazy.
Probably just go crazy.
Just go crazy.
Sometimes the truth isn't in the middle.
So the point is that there is an underlying reason for the stock market's reaction. And there's also, for once, I actually think the stock market at the last part of the week was behaving rationally. And here's the reason I think it's behaving rationally. Let me look at earnings here. About 68% of the companies that have reported so far out of the S&P 500 have reported substantially higher earnings than expected. Let me say that again. Around 65% of the companies that have reported so far out of the S&P 500. Let's see, 337 members of the S&P 500 have reported so far. It's aggregate growth of that set of companies was 9.4% year over year. And this is one of those things that when the investing, whoever it is that does, whoever that, when Mr. Market or whoever drives Mr. Market, the collective the collective think of the people who are buying and selling stocks and causing markets to move around, realize that they came to an interesting conclusion. They came to a conclusion that we're not slipping back towards a recession. In fact, things will be better in the future. There's a lot of evidence out there that that's precisely what's going on. And we also have a lot of evidence as to why the market is down, dropped about 6%. And there's a very good reason that it dropped 6%. And folks, it had nothing to do with anything you read in the paper or heard on the news.
Right. I'm going to make a reference here. If you go back to the headlines of December, you'll find most of the headlines talk about the disappointing retail sales, that retail sales were down, that people aren't getting what they expect.
And well, actually, they were up. They were just up less.
The headlines of the time.
Yes.
Okay, so the headlines of the time are saying this is that retail sales are down. When we look back at it now, we know that retail sales were up. And they were up year over year. They were up at the level, way above the level even of 2007, which was the peak of prosperity back before the recession. We had retail levels that were above that. But the headlines of the time were saying, oh, disappointing, because the people that are talking about it at the time are the people that are having the disappointing retail sales. If you're having less than disappointment, if you're having happiness, because a lot of people are buying from it, you don't really have time to go to the media and say, we're having a lot of business, because you're too busy selling things. The only people that talk about sales while they're going on are the people that aren't getting sales. The same is true about most things, but that's a great reference to use when you see a headline that says retail sales are down. We have to wait because we don't know. We actually had a boom in retail sales. A lot of it came on online, but most of the big businesses have moved online anyway. So, anyway, that was my piece about taking everything you read or hear, for that matter, including us, with that grain of salt, and recognize that we're dealing with data that's going to change.
Well, one of the data points that changes is the commercials we have to do, and we have to do some. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone numbers in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we'll be back after these important words from Town Square's sponsors. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we had a call during the break, and they hung up. So if you want to call back, you can. The telephone number is 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
Now to the reason the market went down.
Yes, the actual reason.
The real reason. And the funny thing was, as I was reading the reason, we're going to maintain the suspense here. See?
Right.
I realized I was doing precisely the same thing they were doing.
Oh, my.
So you could say the market went down because the Personal Wealth Coach was rebalancing portfolios. Could be. Anyway, it's a little bit complicated, but here's the ultimate bottom line reason, and we can go into reason they were doing it. Hedge funds are sort of the tend to be sometimes the 600-pound gorilla in the market. Hedge funds, pension funds, endowments all have a tremendous influence in the stock market. And when we see a movement in the market that doesn't seem to have any relationship with current events, a lot of times, not always, but a lot of times we have to wait until we see hedge fund data later on because they don't release it immediately. And what happened is the stock market, the equity side in the domestic U.S. market and so on, as well as some other places, have been below their historic norms, the trend line. And they've been there since about late 2008 going into 2000. Well, about in late 2007, actually, they started dropping. But in 2008, 2009, obviously, they went down, and the markets became cheap. The stock market, stocks, equities in the United States particularly, became valued well below the historic norms. Now, you don't want to get in front of that avalanche of the market falling when you do this. But what happens is, as it was pretty clearly bottoming in 2009, the reason it went up so fast, and it's a good thing, obviously, is a lot of people concluded that the world was not coming to an end, and that buying stocks for long-term investments would probably be a good idea. So a lot of people started doing that. Well, the hedge funds did it in spades. They constitute a relatively small percentage of the market, but they all tend to move together in a herd now, and they did. And like the portfolios we manage, because this is funny, I was just explaining this to a client the other day, we got more aggressive than we otherwise would normally be. Not a lot more aggressive, a little more aggressive than we otherwise would be because the market was just so darn cheap. And we got some good gains on the way up in that part of the market. But as at the end of last year, the U.S. equity markets, by our estimations at least, are closing in on their historic normal trend. They're not there yet. They're still below it, and they got about 5 or 6% more below it recently. But they're closing in on it. So when that happens, when you're closing in on there, the natural tendency of any good portfolio manager is to start to trim the equity side of the portfolio and beef up the protection side of the portfolio. That doesn't necessarily mean bonds, but there's two aspects to any good portfolio. One of them is appreciation, and the other one is preservation. Well, as you approach, as stocks no longer are outrageously, amazingly cheap, that's the main element in the appreciation side, you tend to sell a little of that off and balance it off on the protection side a little bit.
It's maybe good for you.
And guess what? We just got the data. The data came out last week, and guess what? That's what hedge funds did in January. And there's another reason to that.
Been doing something similar.
Yeah, Jake has another reason for it that I also noted, but I think he's probably read more on it, about the tax effect that we talked about last week.
And this is research that I've done myself. It's research that a lot of other people have done. If you look at any time capital gains rates are raised, top bracket, any bracket, doesn't matter, it tends to not have an effect during the first year that it's in place. But in the January of the following year, you tend to get a dip as people realize, wait, I have to pay taxes that I didn't have to pay before. So this year in January, when people are getting their statements, their 1099 DIVs and such from their different companies that have capital gains, if they've sold stocks or whatever, and they look around, and if it's the high income earners and they go, whoa, wait a minute, I'm in 20%. Tax bracket? I used to be in 15. What happened here? And then they say, wait, there's more. There's another 3.8. And they go, oh, well, I'm not sure. Just sell some stuff right now. We need to pay. So they're selling stock to pay taxes on stock that they sold last year.
And the hedge funds have real life people who invest their money, and it's not tax deferred. And as a result, that they suddenly got notified by a lot of people. What happened is they come out with the end-of-year statement. And the end-of-year statement says you're going to have this much taxable gain. Somebody takes a look at that and goes, whoa, with these new tax rules, this is how much I'm going to have to pay. Because, by the way, on January 15th is when there's an estimated tax payment goes in for a lot of these people.
Right.
And this all compounds out to the fact that there's a reaction. And it's a dip. Now, is it going to be anything major? No. I think we have seen the worst of it. I think it's over. Why do I think it's over? There is no other reason for it. It's a relatively small event.
I do expect to have something more like it later in the year.
I think we're going to have about five of them this year.
We're going to be the jitters that we saw here when you know, we've been talking the whole hour here about the reason for the market drop. And it's none of the reasons that are widely claimed to be true in the media. It's mostly due to jitters. People were waiting for a reason to sell because it's been a while since the market dropped. So they started selling. Oh, this is it. This is the reason. As long as people continue to we were laughing about this on the way in, to call what we've just been through or are going through a correction.
And Jake even showed me a headline where they called it a bear.
Right.
A 6% bear market.
Corrections historically have been 10% drop in the market. Bears historically have been a 20% drop in the market. We've had a 6% drop in the market, and people have called it a correction already. They're saying, oh, since we've been through this correction. The fact that we are this interested in a small amount of volatility is a statement about this being a bull market. Because if you recall, in the year 2008 and 2009, a 6% drop in the market was considered normal for a given day, not for a given week or month. We're talking about a day. When volatility is being looked at the way it is today, and I'm going to go back to the old quotes, bull markets climb a wall of worry. If everybody here is going, oh, it's about to drop, and which is what I've been hearing a lot of, then it's probably not about to drop. It's when people are saying, no, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. That's when you need to be careful. And we're the ones saying that now, but we're the lone voice in the wilderness saying it's going to be fine. This is a normal psychological reaction that people have. The fact is that the market drop started because markets in Asia dropped. And that's backwards. Markets in Asia generally drop because the United States market does. We're not dependent on the companies, the profits of the companies over there. We're dependent on the profits of the companies here. We don't follow them. They follow us because those companies in Asia that make up their stock market are dependent on the companies of the United States buying things from them.
There's an interesting conundrum there.
What's that?
When our markets close, if you look at real time and present, the markets in Asia are still open.
Right.
And then they tend to react to it, except they're open the day before.
Correct.
They're open, like, in other words, when our markets close on, let's say, a Thursday, it's actually...
already Friday.
It's already Friday over there.
And they've opened.
And so you would think that they would know what the markets are going to do on Friday and react to Friday instead of Thursday, except for the fact that it really gets weird when you go to thinking about it. They're in a different day.
Yeah.
And so if we're reacting to what happened, we're actually, if we do it that way, if we're reacting to the Asian markets, and we were, we're reacting to what happened tomorrow.
Right.
So if you want to get your mind wrapped around that one, you can get out a globe or a map, and you'll notice that there's an international dateline that runs right down the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And so what happened this week is the markets were reacting to what happened tomorrow in Asia.
And, very confusing.
And it was probably a bunch of young people doing it.
Yes.
So it would be euthanasia.
I don't believe in euthanasia.
See, there it is.
I had to change. I originally didn't believe in euthanasia. Then I've been to Asia, and there are young people there. So
now you believe in euthanasia.
I do.
Let me give you.
I've seen them with my own eyes.
To come back to a little more serious note on what's going on in the market, I'm going to use an example. I'm not recommending this stock. I want to emphasize again, I'm not recommending this stock. I don't recommend any stock. But a lot of times you can look at an individual company and understand a lot about what's going on in the economy. In 2013, AT&T, which is the bluest of the blue chips at this point, in my opinion, had a total revenue increase of 1%. Now, that's, in other words, instead of making $127.4 billion in 2012, they made $128.8 billion in 2013. That's big numbers. Okay. Earnings per share went up from $2.31 to $2.50. Sounds really good, right? 8% rise in earnings per share. Now, this is the key. Revenue was up 1%. Which is scary. Earnings, that's profitability, was up 8% at AT&T. Now think about that just a moment. What did the market do to AT&T for that? Well, since April, when they announced their earnings last year, it's down about 13%. Now here's why.
The stock is down?
Yes. And here's where the total irrationality. You know, sometimes we look out there and we see the stock market as being an indicator of what's really going on in the big world. If you have a bond that you purchased from AT&T, which has got an A-minus credit rating, which means it's cool, you're getting a coupon, an interest rate. In other words, the money you loan to AT&T, if you have a bond, is paying you between 3 and 4% a year. Now, the stock dividend on AT&T common stock yields 5.7%. In other words, the dividend rate of a blue chip stock is higher than its bond yield. Now, does that sound esoteric? It sounds esoteric. This tells if this is an example, and it is, of what is going on in the market. And I can tell you that among the stable, highly rated investment grade companies, this is a typical situation. It indicates the bond is either overvalued or the stock is undervalued. And I won't have to probably beat too long on people's minds to figure out, with interest rates not far off of record lows, that the stock market is undervalued and the bond market is overvalued. Now, the stock's off 17% since April, while the market was up 13.5%. The Dow was up 13.5% during that period. AT&T is a member of the Dow, by the way. But AT&T has dropped 17% since last April. That is where we are in the market today.
People are afraid for no particular reason.
And the issue is that they're afraid that AT&T will not do well because wire communications in the United States are falling off. Again, this is not real brilliant because guess who the leading provider of cell phone communications in the United States is? It's AT&T. And guess what? This is I know this is going to come as a real shock to the people who are doing the investing and buying communication stocks. But those towers from which we get our cell phone communications, if you go look at one of them, you see big black things that run up the tower. Those are called telephone lines. And guess who owns the majority of them? AT&T. So it is an irrational position that we get because we surge off in one direction or we surge in another. And again, I'm not suggesting you buy AT&T, but I am saying that there is, by digging down deep into the market, we can tell an awful lot about what's really going on out there and ignore the short-term noise.
All right, I have another thing that happened on Friday. The thing that happened quietly, that the market went up anyway. It was a pretty significant thing. A thing
that
over the past several years has shut everything down, has caused markets to collapse or to jump.
The Republicans convened?
Friday was the debt ceiling deadline.
Oh, no, that's right. It was.
We passed it.
That's right. We're technically in default right now.
No, we're not.
We're
thinking about it.
Yeah.
But
the Treasury Secretary
said that next month, by the 27th, we don't have the same kind of abilities that we had last year to come up with cash and emergency ways. We need to get a debt ceiling increase by February 27th, or we're going to be in default. So the debt ceiling deadline is past us. Now, if you'll recall, the last few years, this has been a big deal. It's been a huge deal. The Republicans have trumpeted the fact that it was happening. The Democrats have trumpeted the fact that it was happening. What this means is I think we're going to have a deal relatively quickly, because nobody's talking about it.
I don't know. I mean, it could be that we'll slip past the 27th because nobody's paying any attention.
Right. Well, it's happened so many times. They keep calling wolf and people aren't listening anymore.
We don't have any money.
We just start defaulting. So the reason why I'm bringing this up is something happened in the last extension of the debt ceiling.
Right, I do remember. It was to, and I thought that was an odd date, February 7th. Where did they get that one?
No, February 27th.
February
7th for, yes.
Yeah, February 27th was the official cutoff date beyond which the federal government can no longer borrow money.
Correct.
And we've hit it.
Yes. Now our debt is going to be flat until we either raise the debt ceiling or we default. That's the way things are, because Congress passed a budget for the first time last year. Both houses of Congress, they passed an actual budget. And part of the reason why they passed a budget is because the House Republicans required, as part of the deal to make the debt ceiling go up, that the Senate pass a budget that the House had already passed. So this is why we have an actual budget, which for 5 years before that, we didn't have a budget. Now we have a budget. We're probably going to get another one. It sounds to me like people are actually cooperating a little bit to get things done. Not that we should say that too loudly, or all the constituents out there will say, oh, no, my representative shouldn't cooperate. Stop it immediately.
Well, ours didn't, as a matter of fact.
As a matter of fact, he didn't. You're right.
He voted against that bill.
I don't know. Did he? Did he vote against the budget?
Yeah, not the budget. The compromise last year January.
Payment.
That ultimately kicked us off to here.
Right.
He voted against that.
Well, the reality is that if we don't raise the debt ceiling, we're in a lot of trouble. That's just the reality, because the budget's been passed, and the budget says we have to spend the money. So we've already begun the process of spending the money, and now there's people that won't get paid that have already done the work unless we raise the debt ceiling.
But the thing is, the crucial thing here, the thing that is striking, is that we went past the date when we officially hit the debt ceiling.
Right.
And we're at the debt ceiling.
Uh-huh.
and we have 20 days until we default.
We now have a deadline after the deadline.
Well,
which is just insane.
I will tell you that in a household, if I in my household were looking at the finances and realized that I have less than a month until I default.
20 days, yes.
I would be freaked out.
Yes. I think the Treasury Secretary is freaked out. He's saying, we cannot do what we did before. We went months before doing emergency things. Soon as we got the money, we paid off the things that we weren't paying. And part one of the emergency things that we're talking about here, what is it that the Treasury can do to keep from borrowing money and keep spending money? For instance, right now is tax season. On a given day, tax refunds to people, you, me, everyone else, if we send in our tax return and we require a refund, a given day could be $60 billion with a B from the U.S. government. This is the most expensive time of year.
But they don't, if they don't send out the returns, because they can defer them.
Right.
Then they can cover the debt ceiling issue.
Yes, except that is a form of default. That what they're saying is if they start delaying this, they don't have the, what they did last year during the debt ceiling is they delayed a bunch of stuff, and we're almost out of time, but they delayed a bunch of stuff, including paying into the pension funds for FERS, the Federal Employee Retirement System, the matching part of the TSPs, the sorts of things that the government, we expect them to do. They actually did a form of default last year. And they, if it was a company, that would be considered default. They were allowed to do it because they said, we're the government.
We'll pay you later. As a matter of fact, if people I know of that have contracts with the government just assume that they will not be paid on time.
Correct. Yeah, well, that's ludicrous. That should not happen. That's a form of corruption.
It is.
If the government can do something and not pay for it until they decide to pay for it, that's corruption. And anyway, we're out of time for this hour. We'll be back next hour. If you would like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail waiting. Usually during the week, we have actual live people listening and answering the phone. But if you would like to reach us locally, you can reach us at
947-1111. It's a difficult telephone number to remember, but 947-1111.
You can also reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You may email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com, or you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com.
Your Fox News station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.